Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Noise, the podcast series from PR Week. I'm Frankie Oliver, your host and founder of New Society. And today I'm joined by Jo Carr, co-founder of Hope and Glory and president of Women in PR, Joanne Robertson, CEO of Global Markets for Ketchum, and Ange Balakrishnan, executive director of strategic communications and public affairs at the Information Commissioner's Office. I managed to get that all out in one, which is amazing. So welcome, ladies. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Frankie.
So on the last show, we asked if the PR industry is doing enough to support ethnic diversity in its workforce, given the shocking pay gap revealed in this year's PR Week pay gap report. So this week, we are turning our attention to whether the PR industry is doing enough to also close the gender pay gap and support women. Joanne and I spoke about this subject earlier this year for International Women's Day, but we felt that we could have gone a bit further with our conversation in terms of getting underneath some of the really challenging and often silent issues that still exist inside the industry. So I'm really pleased that we've all come back together, and we're obviously delighted that Ange has agreed to join us for the conversation too. So ladies, let's get going. Turning to you first, Jo, we know that the PR industry gender pay gap is still sitting at around 25% inside agencies and less actually in-house at 6%. What do you think is still continuing to drive this gender pay gap, especially in agencies? And also, what's really underneath all of this? Is this about pay parity at certain levels, or is this much like the research that we were looking at on the last show around women really not progressing to senior positions? What's at the nub of it, do you think?
It's really fascinating, isn't it? Because women are the absolute engine room of our industry, yet men are still very much in the driving seat. And it's maddening. I don't know. They're like cream. They just rise to the top. It shouldn't be like that. And when you think that our industry is so female dominated, with 67% of women in the industry, I don't understand why there aren't more in board level positions. Something is going significantly wrong. And it's not about pay parity, because as an industry, I think we're pretty good at that. And in fact, it's illegal not to pay equally. So quite frankly, I think women are feeling blocked. They're feeling bullied sometimes. They're feeling burnt out. And they're just bailing. They are bailing. They are leaving our industry in droves in their 30s and 40s. And it's a shame. And I think that's really what's behind the difference in pay. It's just less women in those senior roles.
So it's bewildering, really, isn't it, to be in this situation where we are in 2023. So, Joanne, what do you think continues to drive this ongoing glass ceiling? And we'll come and look at some of the deeper issues around burnout and why people are just leaving. But what's at the heart of this glass ceiling, do you think?
Well, I think one of them at the core of it really goes beyond our industry. It's a deep societal issue because there is a that constant discussion about can women have it all? But the reality is you can only have it all if you do it all. And what I mean by that is you have to do it all in the home, with the children, when caring for elderly parents, and then smash it at work. You know, there's not a moment where women kind of get the right level of support that they need in order to really thrive in the workplace, particularly at the highly demanding, high pressure C-suite level. So there's a really core thing we need to address in society about the balance of responsibility outside of work before we can then really drive progress or more progress in work. But then there's also a real need for employers to lean in and put their money where their mouth is. We hear a lot of talk about the support for women in the workplace and in terms of progressing into senior roles. But I'm sure if we did a proper audit of whether what we say, and particularly in the industry world, and what we do to really genuinely support women through, you know, financial support as well as, you know, real coaching, advice, pathways and progress to the C-suite, I think you would find it's only a small minority of agencies who are actually doing what they say.
And Ange, do you feel that some of these issues are also represented in-house?
Absolutely. And I mean, it obviously depends organisation to organisation. And I can only speak having worked in the third sector and the public sector. But I recognise a lot of what Jo and Joanne have described. I've had some really positive experiences where I've worked in organisations where, you know, women have been in leadership roles. They've been supported to go on maternity leave, to come back, to step up on return and take even more senior roles manage the kind of juggle. But I've also been in positions where, it's been really difficult. It's been really traumatic for some women returning back into the workplace after mat leave. But it all comes down to the kind of leadership and culture around you. And I remember as a young person joining government communications, you know, you take your cues from the people that you see around you. And when I first started, there were a few women in those leadership roles, but they didn't talk about their family life. They didn't give any nod to the fact that they were, you know, having to juggle. It kind of felt like you had to keep that aspect of yourself hidden. And I remember feeling really anxious about that next phase of my life. You know, if I wanted to have a family, if I wanted to, you know, move on to the next part of my life, would I still be able to be in this industry? Would I still be able to progress? Those fears are really real. And while I think, in terms of public sector communications, we've seen lots of progress in terms of women getting into those leadership roles, those fears are still really real. I see them all the time. I see women scared about talking about their family and, you know, announcing their pregnancies because of that kind of judgment they feel it would just end their career prospects.
So, Jo, going back to what you said, your first answer there, do you therefore feel that we are at breaking point then as an industry? You know, what's going to give if we think about what Joanne's just said around, you know, the societal picture impacting on agencies, the agencies therefore not responding in the way that they need to because society isn't moving them fast enough in that direction. We're a female dominated industry. We need thriving, brilliant women inside our industry to progress. Ange is obviously hearing similar issues that sit inside, you know, some departments, but obviously it very much depends on the leadership. But if we're looking at the burnout survey that, you know, women in PR recently did that showed that 2/3 of women have considered leaving their positions in senior positions, is it a breaking point? Or are we just going to suck it up?
I think we're getting there. I know. Let's face it. There's been great progress in many ways. And we have some phenomenal female leaders in our industry. So let's not forget that. But, you know, there's a lot of women, 2/3, who wanted to quit or have thought about quitting because the juggle has become very, very real. And the truth is, the more senior you become, the harder it is to talk about it. And I think 60% in our survey that we did at Women in PR, that they said they didn't know how to verbalize it. They didn't know who to talk to. And for me, it's the talking about it. It's being, going back to Angie's point of being having role models and seeing women who've been through it and who are talking very openly about their experiences. And I think if we don't do that, and we don't do that quite quickly, we're going to lose even more brilliant women from our career path.
So is there a plan inside Women in PR to look at this and take this further potentially as an issue to start us, you know, being able to talk about it so that we can start to bring these issues inside our organisations and actually deal with them rather than them potentially being swept up underneath the carpet, as it were?
100%. And there was a seminar last week where some very senior women in our industry, you know, stepped forward along with a psychologist to talk about their experiences of burnout, which I think really is a big, you know, big step forward that people are happy to go on the record and talk about it, and you know, and face the, you know, trying to avoid the stigma that has sat around burnout in the past. We're talking to employers and giving advice as to what they can do. And also talking to women in our industry and what to do, how to flag it when they feel that things are slightly getting out of control. I mean, the story's always been, hasn't it, that, you know, you really can't, you know, give from an empty cup. You can't run on empty tank, but there's an expectation in our industry that we have to almost run on fumes. Like, we are working very long hours. It's a very 24/7 type of industry. And it's down, I think, to us as individuals to set boundaries, and it's down to the organisations that we work for and with to help us set those boundaries and to start to look at the workload.
Well, I think we should definitely look into some of the specific issues that women are facing and how their employers can help them. But I think I remember a survey that was done years ago which said that being a PR professional was the second most stressful job to being an air traffic control. Basically, because there are so many things flying at you from so many different directions. And let's face it, we're not in the paid space, are we? We're in very much the earned space, where there's a whole other dimension of things that can crop up that we aren't necessarily able to plan for. And then alongside that, we've got technology, and that's just completely thrown the workplace and how we manage that. And it isn't just, you know, women ascending, there's young people suffering with mental health issues and burnout and so forth. So there's a multitude of factors that are going on here. But looking specifically then at some of the kind of very sort of female driven issues, the return to work around maternity leave is obviously a really challenging time for both the woman coming back, for the team and for the employer, and obviously for the clients involved as well. But I think it's probably hardest most on the woman that's coming back from maternity leave. It's interesting to just talk about some of those issues and what are the things that are potentially cropping up as really challenging issues as that person's coming back from maternity leave, that then can also lead us into think about what is it that an employer can do much better when it comes to supporting somebody when they're coming back. So if I just think about some of the things that, you know, some women can experience, you know, the job that they left may not be the job that they came back to. There can be a shift in power structures. There can be a shift in terms of the way that the team is now organizing themselves around that role and how well they can reintegrate themselves. Often reported low confidence. They're also managing their whole shift and purview and their change of values and their purview of the world and how it is. And then just the sheer practicalities of integrating a very big, big job and, you know, crazy hours alongside now having this very small, vulnerable person that might be up twice a night, and managing the practicalities of that. And then also the childcare costs that come underneath that with actually ensuring that you've got somebody to look after your baby when you go to work. So, I mean, those are just the starter for 10. What are your thoughts, Joanne, specifically on, does that seem reflective of, do you think, a lot of the main issues that really somebody needs to be thinking about and what an employer needs to be thinking about supporting somebody when they come back?
Yeah, look, taking time out for family leave, and I call it family leave specifically because the man can also take time out to look after the baby, but, you know, we've had hundreds of years of it being the woman's sole responsibility. But taking time out of the workplace is, you know, disorientating, and we are in a very fast-paced industry, and so things will have changed. Whether you take 3 months, 6 months, a whole year, whatever it is, the world will have changed. And so I think we as women, as individuals, have a responsibility to take a bit of control of that and to really plan and think about how do you want to use that time. Now, for a lot of women, that will be to be completely out of the workplace for a year, and that is a brilliant choice to make. For me, I took 6 months out, but I used all of my keeping in touch days during that time because I wanted to feel a sense of connection to work. So there's different ways in which you can manage your own leave. But from an employer point of view, you have these people in your organisation because they're fantastic at what they do. So put in place all the support you can. And one organisation I'd really recommend that we use at Ketchum is called the Comeback Community. And it supports women before, during and after having a baby. And it's a whole range of resources from online support, peer-to-peer support, Q&A sessions, workshops, but most importantly, a one-to-one coach of someone who's been through it before, who's there to answer all the scary questions, or maybe you feel it's a stupid question. But using the employer, using resources to really put some infrastructure around those on family leave, I think is really important.
And Jo, do you have any thoughts and recommendations on this issue and how best to manage the return to work?
Yeah, I would build on what Joanne said, actually. I mean, at Hope and Glory, we have a coaching program. So any actually female or male returner coming back into the workplace has three sessions with a coach, and they can really look at how they're going to balance this new world order, because it's very different. You are juggling at your previous relatively high-powered job with caring responsibilities, and you're not really, no one's really shown you how to do that before. So I think anything that we can give, any support that we can give to help our team set the right boundaries so they're set up for success is really important. So I think that's key. I think easing people back in, not, you know, you hear horror stories of people going in on their first day from a maternity leave and being put on the most important pitch that agency is going to do all year. Let's not do that. That's not fair. And I know that people are ambitious and they want to prove themselves when they come back, but I think you actually have to just give people a bit of time to resettle and get back up to speed.
And reflecting on all of this from an in-house and a specifically government perspective, you know, do you think these issues are being embraced and well handled inside in-house departments?
Again, as I said, it's a mixed picture. It very much depends on the organisation and the culture and leadership at the top. But I mean, just reflecting on what Jo and Joanne said, I really love the idea of like women feeling able to sort of take control of how they structure their leave, keep in touch, and not feeling like they need to wait to hear from their employer that they have a role to play in shaping that. From the employer perspective, I think the things that I've seen that are positive are recognizing the individual. So it's not necessarily a one size fits all approach, being empathetic, putting yourself in the shoes of the woman that's returning and seeing her for all that she is. You know, she has changed. She has got these other caring responsibilities. She's just been through, you know, the most amazing but probably grueling 9 or however the months of her life, and just talking to her about what she wants and how she wants to do it. You know, I think there's two things around not kind of overloading women straight away when they come back in, but also recognizing they're still ambitious. They still want to, you know, do the big projects. And supporting them so that they can do those things, you know, don't rule them out of the game when they come back from maternity leave, but find a way to make it work for them.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
them.
And looking specifically at those sort of coaching and supporting people when they first come in, I mean, it's sort of, we all remember that everybody remembers when you first come back, but actually it's the year, it's the first year and 18 months that actually can also be the hardest bit when you're really living it and feeling it and having to deliver in your new role and navigate all of these pieces. What do you think can best support women during that time? And I think we've all confidentially heard of stories of people having very difficult times and kind of coming back and feeling like their role has been lost to a certain extent. That can be a really challenging experience for women. You know, how do they speak up? How do they find their voice? And how can they best be supported across the first couple of years, not just the first couple of months? Jo, I'm looking specifically at you on this one.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think agency and in-house it can be a tough gig. And as Andrew said a few times now, that actually the leadership style of those organizations is really important. And we work in an industry where there's a cult of the personality. And there are many an organization that have been kind of built in the image of the founders. And that could be great if they're very progressive, not so great if they're not. And I think that can also add another level of or more burden to those women who have come back into the industry trying to navigate workplaces that are perhaps a little bit unforgiving.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Jo. And I'd say, you know, I have had a number of women come and work with me who I would, and I'm not even joking when I say this, I've got PTSD from how they were treated both before, during and after they came back from maternity leave. And things that for even someone who doesn't have caring responsibilities, I would have found the way they were treated shocking. For example, a woman saying she needed to make sure she left by 6 each day, to which I puzzledly looked at her and said, oh, is that when your office hour is finished? And she said, no, 5:30. But I was told if I was going to leave at 6 each day, I had to do it very quietly, that it wasn't going to be given permission. I had to do it by the back door. And she'd just had her first baby. Like that sort of behaviour is still rife across of our industry. And I think to the point made earlier, I think Ange made this point about role models. I think if you're a senior woman, whether you've had children or not, to be honest, but if you've made it into the C-suite of our industry, being open and vulnerable about the challenges we all continue to face, whatever role we've got to. But also when I returned to work after maternity leave, I think I said this in the last podcast, I had a complete focus on leaving loudly. So rather than sneaking out at the door at 5 when I had to go pick up my first baby, Kier, I'd say very loudly to anyone who was listening, I'm off to pick up my baby now. And people would say, oh, but you'll be online later. And I'd say, well, only if I really have to be. I'm bloody exhausted. And so I think that's really important. Like a lot of time people say you make it look really easy. Like you're a superwoman, like you can do it all. And it's like, well, I do my best every day, but it's really, really hard. And to Jo's point, there's times where it's crossed my mind, God, can I keep doing this? Can I keep doing it all when everything's expected of me? And it's hard. It's not easy by any stretch of the imagination. So helping and supporting and being honest about that, I think, is really important.
And I think maybe alongside that, maybe being quite careful about who you're working for, right? Who is the leadership team?
100%.
And maybe when you're going off to have a baby, really thinking quite seriously about what you might be coming back to and how your needs are going to change and whether the job that you took before you had a baby is still the job that you necessarily want when you come back from having a baby. It's probably really worth thinking about. So and just thinking specifically, I think it was so brilliant what you said there about thinking very specifically about the person, which is so true, isn't it? Because every woman's experience, everybody's birth, everybody's experience of having a child is so different. Everybody's different attitudes. Yay, I'm going back to work. And some people are like, oh no, I'm going back to work. You know, very, very different spaces for people. But thinking very specifically also about issues that might be relevant to women of colour who are also coming back and what that means for them. Are there any specific issues that you think need to be raised inside the industry for us to be talking about and understanding?
Yeah, I think there's not just about women necessarily returning from mat leave, but just thinking about women of colour in the industry and some of the kind of things that they may be facing. And it really came to light for me in a conversation I had in one of my last jobs where we were talking about progression, and there were these small kind of speed dating workshops where we were talking with a range of women from ethnic backgrounds and who were covering a range of roles and levels of seniority. One of the things that cropped up was, you know, culturally, often, you know, women are expected to be very respectful of their elders, respectful of men, you know, challenging or talking back or being really assertive can be seen as bad qualities. You know, we shouldn't be too feisty, we shouldn't be too vocal, too forward. But that can kind of sit counter to some of the qualities, you know, consciously or subconsciously, that are looked for in the workplace and in leadership roles. So, you know, I've talked about, like, Joanne's point about, you know, shaping your mat leave, asserting your voice and how you want to sort of return to work and manage your leave. But that can be quite difficult if that's not kind of natural to your culture. And actually, it kind of made me realise as well, I've probably conditioned myself to adopt characteristics that I thought I needed to succeed. I'm naturally quite shy. I probably found it quite difficult to speak up in meetings. I would trail off, you know, before I finished making a point. I'd sit, you know, not in a room where I could hide and make myself smaller. And I know I recognise these issues in other women of colour. And I think it's just, again, being alert to that, and how you can, again, provide that support to women from a diverse range of ethnic backgrounds.
So is that about an ongoing confidence training that potentially needs to be there, really? Because we are fighting against social norms all the time, aren't we? That women who speak up are potentially othered by other people inside the organisation or seem to be the difficult woman. So, you know, what's the answer to that, do you think, Ange?
So I think, you know, confidence comes into it in part, but I think it's also recognising and valuing different leadership styles and traits. You know, you don't always need to be the loudest or the kind of most assertive to succeed. Sometimes the person who is more softly spoken, you know, is still highly valued, still brilliant at their job. But that is something that I think a lot of women of colour have found it difficult to overcome. They're kind of thought of as not as ambitious, not as, you know, hungry for the job, just because they might be a bit quieter, a bit more reserved. But that's just part of their cultural background. So I think we just need to value that diversity in leadership styles and how we approach the role.
So really sort of looking at the macro picture here and really thinking about the way that society is, well, we need society to change, but also all of the massive issues that are going on in the world around poverty, inequality, the climate crisis, the shift towards organisations needing to be much more well-being led, that we potentially are going to need a much more well-being led economy with a different set of values that often are, by many thought leaders, thought to be feminine values. How can you see this playing through? If we were going to give hope to any woman who was listening to this podcast about there is a future and there is a vision of a world that we can create and organisations that can operate and contribute and create that wonderful new world, what is it that potentially you think you can do inside your organisations to kind of shift to those sorts of principles? And how does that impact in terms of the relationships and the contracts and so forth that you might have with your stakeholders and your clients and so forth? Because if you look at some of the burnout stuff, for example, Joe, with the research that you recently did, you know, a lot of this is because of agency decreasing margins and there not being enough people to service the high level of a minimum of 20% profit or whatever it may be. And actually, where do you reimagine the kind of output of that business in terms of it not just being profit, but people, planet, and those sorts of foundations? Where are we going with a kind of vision that will enable us to step into that? Agencies typically can be quite laggy behind their clients in terms of delivering that. But really, if we want to stay on the front foot and keep all of these women inside our organisations, isn't that where we need to be moving, Jo?
That's a really big question. I'm not quite sure where to start with that, but I agree. And I think there is already signs of hope. There are definitely organisations that are much more progressive, who are looking at this. They may have become B Corps, they may not be B Corps, but they are still applying that kind of people, planet, positive approach. So it's not just about profit. But I do think we have a problem as an industry with the margin, because if we want to encourage people to have a life outside of work, I would hazard a guess that a lot of agencies have made their money on the hours between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. right? It's the time outside of work. And so I think as an industry, we're going to have to really lean into that and put up our prices and be a lot feistier, I think, with our clients about what our time costs, because we can't just rely on people's goodwill and the fact that they will, we're happy to kind of get in early, work late. And I think if we are going to address that sort of well-being element and life-work balance, then there has to be some quite tough conversations around money, because I think that's been the undoing in many places of why the hours are so long.
Joanne, would you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I would also say that we have to be realistic with people too. You know, we're talking about getting women in our industry into the C-suite at that C level. Yeah, it's not easy and it's not a 9-to-5 job. There is things you have to deal with. It is fast paced. It is high pressure. You know, for a lot of us, that's part of the reason we're attracted to be in the C-suite. So there is a bit of give and take. I also think as an industry, we have to make the transition, and we've probably been talking about it since the day I entered this industry over 20 years ago, from time-based value to actual outcome value. Because at the end of the day, this time-based system that we work in, particularly as agencies, drives that long hours culture. But actually what clients want from us is really strong deliverables and outputs and outcomes and impact, positive impact for their organisation. And that's got to be an industry challenge. We've got to come together and push back on some of the decades old norms that have defined how we run our businesses. So that does relate to margin, that does relate to pricing, it does relate to value. And it's a big job, but we'll only achieve it if we come together to do it.
So Ange, thinking about you from a client perspective and taking on board an agency, and obviously we've all been on the end of, you know, the very helpful side of procurement, but also sometimes the unhelpful side of procurement where it is very time-based. Can you imagine a world where you can move to a more kind of values-based versus time model?
Absolutely. I think Joanne's point about, you know, output and impact is where the focus has got to be. And, you know, the same goes in-house when you're dealing with a whole host of internal clients. You know, we've got to focus on creating that environment of trust. It's not about the number of hours that you put in. It's about the work that you deliver at the end of it and the impact that it's making. And that's really got to be the focus. But that requires a kind of a shift in mindset, a shift in how we're kind of looking at these things. And it really depends on being able to trust, you know, whether it's the agency that we're hiring or the people in our teams doing the work. And having those difficult conversations, again, whether it's with your client internally, your CEO, to kind of look after your people. If that's where you're investing, if that's what you're investing in, you've got to stand by it. And it requires some brave conversations sometimes.
Jo, is there a moment here for women in PR or the PRCA, the AAR, all of these organisations to be coming together and having a really frank and open conversation about the business model that currently is kind of sat at the heart of PR and what it's now doing in terms of the really negative impacts it's now having in terms of its people and potentially how it needs to change?
I agree. I think we should be coming together. I think we're all slightly operating in silos. That's never a good thing. I think there's a lot of learnings that each of the organizations could bring. And there's certainly a lot of research that we should all be sharing as well about what's working in what areas and what's not. I think there is definitely scope for more cross-functional or cross-body working. I think it's really important. I think, yeah, absolutely. If we're going to protect the industry, we've got so many talented people, men and women in our industry. We don't want to see any of them being blocked or falling out because we haven't given them the right support. I mean, we're a people business. We've always have been. It's a fantastic industry to work in, right? That's why we're here. We love it. And I really want to protect it for the future.
So, ladies, that brings us to the end of what I feel is a much bigger conversation. And I feel like we should be dialing in the PRCA and everybody else to join the conversation now. Hopefully we will. Maybe it's another time. But just to finish on just this final question, which is, if a woman could create the best PR agency or in-house department in the world, what would they do? Maybe let's just start with one thing, because I feel like there's a whole other podcast. But Jo, to you, what would be your one thing that you would do?
Wow. One thing I would do, actually, I'd put female health in the middle of that conversation. I think if men had periods, I think support
the world would stop working.
Exactly. I think support for female health would be completely different. And so I think if we were going to, yeah, I would put female health at the heart of it and really understanding what female employees want.
I feel like there's a headline there. If men had periods, the PR industry would be a different place, right? Anyway, so right, Joanne, to you.
I think I probably, I mean, loads of things. You can imagine my list is very long, but I think one place where we haven't really cracked it yet is making job shares more of the norm. I think that would be a big step forward.
I just add on that one, a client of mine at Diageo worked on a job share for the last 10 years of her career, and it is just amazing listening to somebody just make it work. It was no drama. It worked. It was totally fine. So organisations like Diageo have been very progressive with flexible working and stuff. So it is totally possible. It's just whether that organisation wants to support it or not. And finally, Ange, to you, what do you think?
Just to say as well, job share, seen so many great successful ones in the public sector. But what would I say? I would champion a different type of leadership and the culture that comes with it. So, you know, we don't need to be always the most poised, polished, perfect, strong. I think there's so much strength in being empathetic, being a bit vulnerable, being open, being real, showing our flaws. And that, I think, would just change so much of how we approach this industry.
Well, I think there's just so much to dig into there for potentially even the next show, isn't it? Which is how to make job shares work, how to make men realise what it's like to have a period, and how we change our leadership style to be much more empathetic and vulnerable for this great new world that we think we women can have a role in playing. So sadly, that brings us to the end of this show, because I'd love to keep talking. Thank you, ladies, to you both for joining us. And thank you so much to everybody that's been listening. We look forward to you joining us next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.